All right, we're beginning here from the beginning of the parak on Lamed Gimel with Bet. Mafkid etzel chaveiro beima ukelim. Person who deposits with his friend animals or utensils, any other item. Venignivu osha abdu. They were stolen or they were lost. The osha abdu is a little bit difficult over here because we're going to see that we're speaking about kefel. Kefel is only relevant when you're speaking about Geneva and not about Aveda. So you would have to explain the Osha Abdu in a manner which means that they thought it was lost, but in the end it's found out to be stolen, because otherwise there won't be any payment of Kepo that is relevant over here. And you can see that in the Tosafot, he says, Italo Garsi Osha Abdu. There's some people who take that Girsa out completely, because otherwise it's very hard to understand. Shum Aveda Leka Kepo. Ve'eshli Yashiv Shekach Toena Nifkad. That's the claim that he's making, that it was lost, which is also, we're speaking about a Shomer Chinam here in the Mishnah, so Gneva and Aveda are both options for him to relieve himself of any obligation. So the fact that he's Toein Avdu, that's fine. V'achar kach nimsa ganav. But then they find the ganav. Inami, ani yodim shenignavu mitoch beito, ach enan yodim mipasha. So there's another possibility, is that they were stolen, we're just not certain as to whether it was the fault of the Shomer or not the fault of the Shomer. Oh, Shabdu, Shanu Dim Shin Evad Mimenu, Achliodinima Yede Gneva, O Yede Davar Acher. Or it is lost, but we don't know how it got lost. Did it get lost because it was stolen, or it got lost because he lost it? So Tosfot gives alternatives as how to keep the Girsa of Osha Abdu in the Mishnah, but you can understand what the problem might be to keep it in because of the fact that there's no kefil associated with the Abdu. Shilem Velo Ratzali Shaba. If the Shomer Chinam, who has the option here to take a Shvuah and relieve himself of any obligation because Gneva and Aveda for a Shomer Chinam are Pturim, instead he decides to pay and not take a Shvuah. Sheri Amru, because they say Shomer Chinam Nishba Viyotze, that is the right of the Shomer Chinam to take a Shvuah and discharge his obligation. Nimtza Ganav, Mishalem Teshlumi Kefel. If they find a Ganav, then after he's paid for the item, then he pays Kefel. Tavachu Machar, Mishalem Teshlumi Arba V'chamisha. If the Ganav not only stole it, but he also shechted it or sold it, then he pays four or five times. L'mi Mishalem, who does he pay that Knas to? The Misha Pikadon Eitzlo, to the one who is in possession of the Pikadon. The one in possession of the Pikadon now is the one who paid for it. The Shomer Chinam, when he paid for it, in essence, acquired it. And in acquiring it, now he becomes the Baalim of the Pikadon. And as the Baalim of the Pikadon, he's entitled to the benefits of the Kefel or the Arba B'chamisha in this case. Nishba velo ratza l'shalem. On the other hand, if he takes a Shvuah and relieves himself of any obligations and does not pay, Nimsa Ganav, if the Ganav is found, Mishalem Tashlume Kefel, he pays double. Tavachu Machar, Mishalem Tashlume Arba V'chamisha. If there's Tvicha U'Mechira, he pays four or five times. This is all from the Gemara in Baba Kama. Lemi Mishalem, at this point, who does he pay to? The Bala Pikadon, to the original owner, because the original owner is still the owner of the item, and therefore he's entitled to the benefits of Kefel Arba V'chamisha. Gemara says, Lamele the Mitnei Behema, Velamele the Mitnei Kelim. Why do I need the Mishnah to mention both Behema and Kelim as if there is something unique about each of these items instead of just saying a generic, a Pikadon? Why are they specifying Behema and Kelim? Where it says, Tzriche, Ditana Behema, had it just written an animal, Avamina Behema, Hu Demakni Lake Fela, Mishum De Nofish Tircha, Be'ula, V'lafuka, the Balim are willing to give the Shomer Chinam the Kefel because of the extra effort that he put in to take care of the animal. Taking care of an animal is not simply you throw it into the yard. You have to take care of it. You have to bring it in. You have to take it out. You have to clean up after it. You have to feed it. All other things that are involved. It's not just a simple inanimate object that you stick in the corner of your house. Well, Kelim, the lo nafish tirchayu. Another Kelim where you can just put it on a shelf, stick it in a closet. Emelo makni leik fela. Maybe there he would not be willing to give him that right of kefel. Vitana Kelim. If the Mishnah only wrote about Kelim, Avamina Kelim, who demekni leik fela, mishum dolo nafish kaflayu. Maybe over there, the Baalim are willing to give the Shomer Chinam when he pays for it, the Kefel, because the Kefel isn't so much. Doubling of the item, we're assuming here that Kelim are worth less than a Behema, so the doubling of that amount is not significant of a Behema. T'chitava chumachar, mishalem tashlumei daad behei, by a Behema, not only do you have Kefel, But more so, even you have 4 or 5 times, mean that you have significant knas that's associated here. Maybe over there he wouldn't give him the rights to the kfela. Remember that in Baba Kama we discussed the fact that the Arben Chamisha is made up of kefel. That's the way the Gemara views it, is that the kefel plus to get you to the Arba Chamisha. So if he's not willing to give you the Arba Chamisha, he's also not willing to give you the kefel. Tzricha, therefore I need both items to be mentioned in the Mishnah. Now, mat kifla, Rami Bar Chama. So now Rami Bar Chama poses a question. The interesting part of it is, as you can see in Rashi, Ametznitan Kametama, that he is finding a problem with our Mishnah, and therefore his question relates to the Mishnah itself. The problem with that is, you can see in the little Aleph with the Rav Ronchenberg, that the word matkifla in general is not used as a terminology to question a Mishnah. Matkifla is when we have some sort of thesis, and then he wants to challenge the thesis that is brought. Matkifla to question a Mishnah, that's not the language that you use. And therefore the Ritva sees this as a question on the thesis we just proposed, that the Mishnah is a tzrichuta, that the way that we explain the need for behema and kelim, and the fact that the ba'alim are makne the kefel to the shomer, that underlying premise is what generates the question. Without that, you could have just explained the Mishnah simply as a takanat chachamim. But now that we're explaining it as a full-fledged kinyan that moves from the owner to the shomer, then we have this problem. In defense of Rashi, the Me'arav Mironchenberg brings other possibilities of where we do see matkifla used in this situation, or maybe that the language that's used here should have been different instead of matkifla. But just to be aware of the fact that it's a strange way to start out a sugya. Va ein adam makne davar shelo ba leolam. We have a fundamental problem with our Mishnah, which is that our Mishnah seems to indicate that you're able to sell forward something that does not exist yet. Because over here, the Ba'alim, in essence, are giving the Shomer a right to acquire the Kefel, even though the Kefel does not exist today. When they transact, when the item is deposited with the person who's going to watch it, the Nifkad, then at that moment in time, Kefel is an uncertainty in the future. And yet we're saying here that the Mafkid gives him the right to that Kefel. Ve'afilu the Rabbi Meir. And even according to Rabbi Meir, damar dam makne davar shelo ba leolam, that a person is able to transact or acquire things in the future, hani milei, that's only true k'om peri dekel david atu. That's only true with items like a palm tree for its fruit, where it's almost certain that the item will present itself. Yes, the item is not here now, but in the future the item will present itself, and therefore you can rely on that to sell something forward. But to sell something where there's complete uncertainty that revolves around this issue, there's no way that you can sell it. The truth is that that is a machloket amoraim later on in the Masechta, but the Gemara is nokate the emda of Rav Huna here, which is that Rabbi Meir is limited to these situations where it's ati, that it's something that comes about. Even though Rabbi Meir's core shita in Kiddushin, which we've seen before, is that Adam Makneh Davar Shebalalam is talking about Kiddushin. In the case of Kiddushin, when he says, in the future, when I will be freed, we'll get married. Or in the future, when your husband passes away, we will be married. So those don't sound like cases that are Avide Da'ati.
The Rashba quotes the answer of the Balei HaTosafot, which is that, Kaven Sheguf Nikneh Be'olam, Ela She'enu Birshuto, over here, by the case of marriage for a future time period, the individuals exist in the world, even though they're not within either their own control or control of the other individual. Even though that's not a natural thing that will happen, or it's not obvious that they will either be divorced, their husband will pass away, that they will be freed or convert, nevertheless, that's still better. Something that doesn't exist in the world at all. Even the avidate, even though it has a natural cycle or probable outcome that it will be there in the future. And therefore, Rabbi Meir Shita says that that case of Davar Shelo Be'olam is considered to be okay and is even better or stronger than the cases that we're speaking about here, which is something that's avidi da'ati if it doesn't yet exist in the world.
So you have to deal with that for Rav Huna Shita, but Gemara here is using that Shita and saying, listen, you have the Shita of the Chachamim who say that Davar Shelo Be'olam does not allow you to acquire something. Even Rabbi Meir, who permits it, is limited to situations or circumstances where the item is almost certain to come in the future. So how, in this case, is he acquiring the kefil, which is complete uncertainty? So Tosafot says that we have a concept, which is that you're allowed to buy something that exists in order to garner something in the future. So for instance, you can sell dekel lipeiroteha. You don't sell the peirot, the fruits, but you sell the palm tree for its fruits. That means that you don't sell the physical palm tree, you sell the palm tree solely for the production that's on it. And there, Tosfot notes that even the Chachamim agree that you're able to do something like that. So Tosfot says, why isn't this the same scenario here? He gives him the para to watch, and he can say to him, I'm giving you the para for its kefil, and that should work. What the Balei Tosfot point out over here, that in this instance, it doesn't work. And that's exactly what the Gemara is saying. Yesh lomar, de makshe savar, de mishat mishicha ikne lo apara liknot kefil kishi yavo, like you were describing, like you wanted to suggest. But nevertheless, amrina, de bedekel de perot, afil rabbanan mode de kani, hainu mishum de avidi de atu. That's only in a case where it's certain it will happen. Of a hocha, de lo avidi de atu, afil Rabbi Meir lo kani. Even according to Rabbi Meir, it won't work. So what the Tosafot says is, yes, here you're selling the physical item for its future profits or its future production, but that only works where there's a certain amount of certainty to that future production. For instance, if it was for the wool on a sheep, if it was for the fruits on a tree, that you can do, and there even the Chachamim agree you can do it because the physical object is in the world now. Even though the thing you're selling is in the future, you're selling him the item for its production rights. That you're allowed to do. But what Tosfot says is that's limited to things that will almost certainly be produced. Things that naturally come, you need really no interference for them to come about, they will happen naturally. On the other hand, kefil, which is complete uncertainty, that involves a number of structures. In order for there to be kefil, there's no certainty of either of those items, and therefore to sell the kefil in that manner, even Rabbi Meir will say is no good, because that's not a vidi da'atu. That's not something that will, by definition, happen, or not something that will come automatically. And that's the nature of the question according to the Balei Tosafot. And it might even be the case in Rashi. You could be Medayik in Lashon HaRashi that he's saying something similar, which is that the question revolves around selling the item for its future production. But the problem here is that there is no certainty in that future production. Avahacha miyemar demigneva. So over here, who says that there's any certainty about it being stolen? And therefore, you have a problem because you're selling something that has complete uncertainty surrounding it. V'imtim salomar demigneva, miyemar demishtakach ganav. If you say that we're certain that it's going to be stolen in the future, miyemar demishtakach ganav. Who says that you're going to find the ganav? V'imishtakach ganav. And even if you find the ganav, miyemar demishalim. Who says he's going to end up paying kefil? Dimomode yumiftar. Remember, mode beknas is patur. Therefore, the ganav could admit to the fact and exempt himself from any payment of knas. Tosafot points out, this is like Shita Rav, who says that if you're mode beknas and then edim come, you still are patur from the knas. There is a dissenting opinion, but here the Gemara is following that Shita of Rav, which Tosafot believes is la'alocha, that mode beknas, the achar kach ba'u edim, is patur. And therefore, over here, you have a probability tree, which involves so many different possibilities. Will it be stolen? Even if it is stolen, who says you find the ganav? You find the ganav. Who says he's going to pay kefil? Amar Rava. Rava says, Nasek omer lo. As if he said to him, Lishit tignav, when it is stolen, vitirtze, and then you are deciding, vitishalmeni, you pay me, hare parati knuya lacha miachshav. My para is given to you from now. So here's the first suggestion along the lines of what you were saying, which is that who says that we're talking about the here and now when he's given the animal? But what he is suggesting is there is this agreement between them, an implicit agreement. How implicit the agreement is, most of the Rishonim read it, Nasek Omer, is means as if he said it. Like you can see that in Rashi. Dekim lehu derabbanan. The Rabbanan came to a conclusion. The Baalim would like to know or have certainty about the payment of the principal amount. So Amanat Sheis a fake kefil atid lavo shel shomer. And therefore they're willing to forego the future possibility of collecting kefil in order to get the principal amount. So So what Rashi suggests over here is that the Chachamim say that we have come to a conclusion after assessing these types of situations. In these types of situations, the owners are much more want to have their principal amount back than to take a risk of getting the kefel. And so therefore, they're willing to give up rights. Whether that means that they voluntarily do that, we say Naseka Omer, even though he didn't say it, it's as if he said it because we know how people think, or whether this is an action of Beitin. There are some Rishonim, I think the Rashbam suggests that this is a Beitin action. I mean, Beitin really is intervening here and creating a Kinyan. Whereas most Rishonim, and the way Rashi reads it, is that we assess the situation and it's as if this individual comes to this conclusion. The problem with Rashi's position is that who says that the buyer, who is the Shomer over here, also doesn't want a situation where he'd rather take kefal risk than principal risk? Which is that who says he wants to pay the principal amount in order to get a safek kefal in the future? If you look at from the other perspective, then the Shomer is just as willing to say, I don't want to pay the principal and I'll take the risk of not getting the kefal. So why do you assess it and say the Baalim really want the principal and not the kefal? Therefore, there's a kinyan. On the other side of that has to be a Shomer who really wants to pay the principal amount. Well, why does he want to pay the principal amount? Because he wants to get the kefal. Who says that he wants it? Maybe he'd rather save the money and not get the kefal. So it's difficult for that reason to understand from in a totality what Rashi is saying. Therefore, many Rishonim lean to the side of what's later on in the Gemara, which is this idea of nachat ruach, that there is some sort of relationship that exists between these parties, and therefore the Baalim over here are willing to give up a certain amount of upside to the Shomer because of the nature of their relationship. We'll see that in the second half of today's daf, and that might be the impetus for him giving up some future rights in order to allow the Shomer to pay over here because of the fact that they have this relationship, but there's some benefit in the relationship. And then for Rashi, what you have to argue is that the perspective of the Baalim trumps over here because the Shomer in the end wants to maintain his reputation. And his reputation as both someone who's honest, someone who takes care of the situation. And therefore the Shomer might be more likely to pay for the item even though he has a safek if he collects kefal or not. But he wants to make whole with the Baalim. He'd rather not take a shvuah, which is what the nature of most of these payments are, to avoid the taking of a shvuah. And therefore, he's more likely, even though there's a safek here, to make a payment. So your suggestion is, why do we have to go through all these machinations in order to get him the kinyan kefal and say, listen, oh, there's some sort of relationship that existed at the time that the transaction originally took place. And through that kinyan mishicha, he's giving him the rights to the kefal. Why don't we just say that the individual is buying it at the time that he pays for it? The problem is that ma'ot are not konot. I mean, that money itself is not a valid vehicle of kinyan. We'll actually see later on in the Gemara, it's machloka Rabbi Yochanan and Ish Lakish, whether kinyan ma'ot works min haTorah or not. But either way, according to both of them, whether that's because min haTorah ma'ot are not konot, or because the Rabbanan instituted this, you need a kinyan mishicha in order to have a kinyan over an item, for the reason that a person will not say, that your stuff was in the attic over there, and it all burnt up. Sorry, too bad. So the Chachamim wanted there to be a kinyan mishicha, or midoraita. According to some, there is no kinyan ma'ot, and you need a kinyan mishicha. The kinyan mishicha, that doesn't exist, because at the time that they're transacting with the money, the animal's gone. So there's no ability to create a kinyan mishicha. The Gemara here is searching for a way for the kinyan to take place at the time of the original transaction, because otherwise you don't have a kinyan or ability to make the kinyan when it's already stolen. So that's why the Gemara is focused on doing it this manner. So now, matkifla Rabbi Zeira, iochi afilu gizotev evladuteo nami. The way that Rava is structuring it now is that retroactively, the Shomer gets the kinyan from the time of the original transaction, which basically says, I'm handing you over the animal at this point in time. As part of that handing over is if in the future you decide you want to pay me, then I give you rights to acquire the animal mi'achshav, from now, meaning lemafreya, retroactively. Rabbi Zeira says, well, if that really works, then all of the shearings and all of the offspring of this animal, the production of this animal, from the time that it was given to the nifkad until the time of the gneiva, should belong now to the shomer and not to the mafkid. He basically acquired it retroactively. So then the
the Baalim are going to have to pay him all the benefits that they garnered that during that period of time. So it says, Alama Tanya, we have a bright that explicitly says, Chutz mi gizoteh v'vladoteh, that he does not get the right to the shearings and to the offspring. El Amar Rabbi Zera, Naseh ke omer lo, Chutz mi gizoteh v'vladoteh. It's as if he said to him, I'm giving you acquisition retroactively with the exception of the shearings and the offspring. I says, my Pascha, how do you make such a differentiation? What makes it that you get the benefit of Kefel, but you don't get this benefit? How do you give him ownership for only certain items and not other items? Why do we assume that the Baalim would draw a line between these two items? Is there some sort of natural reason to assume that these are different? The Gemara answers, Stama de Milta, yes, the default situation is Shvacha da'ata mi'alma ovid inish de makne. When you're talking about Shevach that comes from outside, then people will give that up. Meaning that it's some sort of exogenous benefit that is coming to the party that they're willing to forego, like Kefel. On the other hand, Shvacha de migufa, when it is something that is endogenous to the animal itself, meaning it's its production, that lo avinish de mikne. That is something that they won't give up, because that's something that is part and parcel of the animal. They see that as an extension of the animal. So something that is direct production of the animal, people don't forego or don't give up those rights. So the Baalim, when they give the kinyan, will exclude that by design, and we can assess situations in normal. Baalim don't give those things up because it's too certain that those items will happen. Since there is certainty, since there is a lot of this, he's not going to give up those rights or that benefit. When it comes to Kefel, there he's willing to give up such a right because it might not happen. It's something that's way in the future. So when we don't say anything, the Gemara says that the Shomer is not entitled to keep the production of the animal. That's the default. But he is entitled to keep the Kefel. Why in a default situation do you bifurcate the din between a situation of Kefel and a situation of the production of the animal? Gemara says is because that is the way people think. The common understanding between people is that anything that is direct production of the animal, the Baalim want to keep. Something that comes from the outside, that's like a windfall from the animal, that's, they're willing to give that up because of the, as Rashi says, the certainty to get the Karen. Or according to what we say later on in the Gemara, because of the nature of the relationship, the fact that this guy's doing him a favor to watch it, he's willing to give up that windfall in the future because of the niceties that this person's doing for him. Igadam, right? Some say Amarava, Nasek Omerlo, Lishik Tignav Vitirtse Vitishalmeni, that when it is stolen and you desire to pay me instead of taking a shvua, Samuch the Gnevata Knu Yalacha. Right by the time, the moment before it's stolen, then you get acquisition of it. My Benayu, what's the difference between them? So in both cases, you need a certain amount of retroactive acquisition because you can't create the acquisition once it's stolen. Once it's stolen, you have no ability to transact or to buy or sell the item because you're lacking in a kinyan because the animal's gone. So the only possibility is that the acquisition happens while the animal's still in possession of the shomer. According to the first lashon of Rava, that happened retroactively from the time of the original transaction. The first meshicha that he did to become the shomer is also the kinyan for the kefel later on. In this scenario, Rava says, no, that the kinyan happens a moment before it's stolen. The moment before it's stolen, the kinyan goes into effect. Now, you have a problem over here because of the fact that you're trying to make a kinyan right beforehand. What effectuates that kinyan? So that's what the Gemara says here, my benayu. Iku benayu kushyat Rabbi Zera. One nafkamina here is the question Rabbi Zera raised about the gizot and the vladot, the production of the animal. In the first lashon of Rava, that becomes a problem. Because if he owns it retroactively from the original Mishicha, then he should be entitled to all of that stuff, and we answered it. But then, according to the second Lashon and Rava, that's not an issue. Because he only acquires the animal immediately before it is stolen. But that means that anything before that, there's nothing to give up, because it belonged to the Baalim all the way along. So that solves that problem. Implicit in this, by the way, is that after the Gneva, the Gizot and Vladot will belong to the Shomer. Because it's only from that point beforehand that he didn't own it. But from the moment that he does own it, that would indicate or imply that the Gizot and the Vladot belong to the Shomer heretofore. Because the Baalim give it up basically at that time, or give up the ownership of the animal for the Gizot and Vladot once it is stolen. That is what most Rishonim say. There are those that say still it's under this rubric that we mentioned before, which is that the Baalim, by default, want to keep anything that's direct production of the animal, and that might still be true, even in the scenario where he gives up the ownership right before the Gneva, or it's already stolen, he might still want the Gizot and Vladot. So there are those that suggest otherwise, but it would make sense to say that after the Gneva, the point of Gneva, it belongs to the Shomer. But the other nafkamina to them is Inami de Kayema Ba'agam. It's out in the swamp. It's out in the grazing fields. And that is because you need a kinyan. So now there are two parts to any kinyan. There's a maaseh kinyan, which is the actual action of the kinyan. And then there is the effectiveness of the kinyan, which is the kiyum, the ability for the kinyan to go into effect. So now a lot of times those happen simultaneously, which is I say to you, here, make a kinyan on this animal. And at that moment, you acquire it. So the maaseh kinyan is that you do a meshicha now, and you get the acquisition right away. The kinyan goes into effect immediately. But there are times where I say, do a kinyan meshicha, and then you're going to acquire it in 30 days. There's a delay in the effectiveness of the kinyan. So for certain kinyanim, that works. For other kinyanim, it doesn't work. And we spoke about this a lot in Kiddushin, where the individual hands money to the woman and says, well, we're going to be married in 30 days from now. Meaning that the maaseh kinyan is now, but the effectiveness is later. So over there we discussed the fact that by a kinyan meshicha, the kinyan disappears after you've done the maaseh kinyan. Once you've done the meshicha, if you say that we're only going to have this take effect in 30 days, the problem is that the kinyan meshicha is gone now. Because at the time when the kinyan goes into effect, the meshicha is long gone. So the solution of the Gemara over there is to say, you have to say, mi'achshav, ulachar shloshim yom, which is basically that the kinyan persists from now until 30 days, and it's only completed at the end of the 30 days. Therefore, there's still a connection to the maaseh kinyan. That is lacking over here, and therefore, the original kinyan mishicha will not help you. You had a maaseh kinyan, a mishicha, but the mishicha, you say, only takes place a moment before the gneva. The moment before the gneva, the kinyan mishicha is long gone. It doesn't exist anymore, so you can't say I have an effective kinyan now. Where is the maaseh kinyan? The maaseh kinyan was long ago and long gone. Forgotten about it, has nothing to do with this situation because you have no connection between the maaseh kinyan and the effectiveness of the kinyan. Ella, what you must say, and this is what Rashi indicates over here, that it's done through a kinyan chatzer, which is that your property acquires it on your behalf. And therefore, at the moment before the gneva, it was in your possession. It was in your chatzer. Therefore, your chatzer acquires on your behalf, and that is both the maaseh kinyan as well as the effectiveness of the kinyan happens at that moment. The problem being when it's not in your chatzer. What happens out in the agam? So if it's out in the agam and you say retroactively the kinyan was effective originally, no problem. Because then the maaseh kinyan mishicha and the effectiveness are on the same day. That's retroactively from the day that he handed you the animal. That's the first lashon of Rava. According to that, if it's in the agam when it gets stolen, no big deal, no problem at all. On the other hand, if you think that the effectiveness of the kinyan is only now, a moment before the gneva, the original mishicha is not going to help you. It's only in the kinyan chatzer now that helps you. If it's out in the agam, there is no kinyan chatzer. And so therefore it would fail. And that would be the nafkamina between them. If the animal is not located in your possession when it's stolen, then you don't have a kinyan because there was nothing that created a maaseh kinyan a moment before the gneva happened. Now Tosafot does ask, based on what I told you before, that the Gemara in Kiddushin solves the problem. How do I connect between a kinyan mishicha and an item, say, me'ayom or me'achshav, le'achar shloshim yom? So why don't you use that same formulation over here, and then you could deal with the problem? See, so that's what the Tosfot says. Tema, denema, nasek omer lo, shetignav, tashlimeni, harei prayati, knuya lecha me'achshav, samuch le'gneva. Exactly like you do in the Kiddushin. So Tosfot toys with the idea, doesn't have a strong answer, and he says, he says, maybe Kiddushin is a stronger form of Kinyan, or the ability for someone else to make a Kinyan when you have Kiddushin is stronger. He says, maybe this is unique to the concept of Kiddushin and would not apply over here. But he leaves it a little bit almost like a tzarachiyun. Why doesn't the Gemara make that suggestion? That's what he's thinking. It's as if he said, the Kinyan is effective from now until the time it's stolen. By doing that, then the kinyan is a duration that only completes at that moment, but it means that the original mishicha still helps you. So that's Tosfot does ask that question and says maybe kiddushin is different. All right, now the Gemara says shileim velo ratzah lishava. If he decides that he wants to pay and not take a shvuah, Amar Rabbi Chiya ba'av Amar Rabbi Yochanan lo shileim shileim mamash
Doesn't mean that he literally pays for it. Not that he has to actually pay, but he has to make the decision. Meaning that he has a choice before him. He can take a shvua or he can pay. If he makes the decision and he articulates the decision that I'm going to pay and not take the shvua, that's as if he paid already. Meaning that he gets the kinyan immediately when he decides to pay, not when he actually pays for the animal. Obviously, that would be a nafkamina if the animal is found or the ganav is found between the time he pledges to pay and the time he actually paid. So what Rabbi Yochanan says is it goes back to the pledge, not to the time that he actually physically pays for it. It's not. Our Mishnah presents a problem for this shita, which is shileim velo ratzali shava. It says if he wants to pay and not take a shvua, shileim in velo shileim lo. Makes it sound from the Mishnah that the decisive point is when he pays, not when he decides to pay. It says eima seifa. What about the latter half of our Mishnah? Nishba velo ratzali shileim. Decide if he takes a shvua and doesn't want to pay. Time of the lo ratza, ha ratza, but had he chosen to pay, afal bi shelo shilem, even if he had paid, then it would have worked. Ela miha lekla mashma mina. From our Mishnah, you can be medayik in both directions, which is the ratio of the Mishnah talks about physically paying, the sefer talks about taking a shvua, and so the deal from each side of that is in the opposite direction. The deal from the ratio is that only if you paid do you get it. The deal from the sefer is only if you took a shvua instead of opting to pay. But had you opted to pay, had he wanted to pay, it would have been sufficient grounds to give him the rights. When it says, Tanya Kavatad Rabbi Yochanan, we do find a braita that's supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's position. A socher para mi chavero, someone who rents a para from his friend. V'nignava, and it is stolen. V'amar hala, hareini mishalem, v'eini nishba. And the person says, I will pay and not take a shvua. V'achar kach nimsa ganav. And then the ganav is found, mishalim tishlumei kefal socher. He pays it to the socher, even though he never actually paid it, he only pledged to pay it. Now, what's interesting about a socher is that a socher, we have a machloket as to whether he's a shomer chinam or a shomer sachar. Right, so now, in this case, from the nature of the bright over here, it sounds like the socher is being treated like a shomer chinam, because he had the option to claim gneva. But a shomer sachar, a claim of gneva doesn't help you. It only helps you if you're a shomer chinam, so it seems that this bright is leaning in that direction. All right, Amar Rav Papa, shomer chinam, kemin shamar pashati makne le kfeila. As soon as he says that I was pusheya, he gets the kfeila. Di'i bai pater nafshe b'gneva, because he had the option to say that it was stolen, and instead he says pashati. So what Rav Papa indicates over here is that the shomer chinam has a right of acquisition of the kefel rights, not only in a situation where he could have been patur by taking a shvua, but even in a case where he is now michayev himself. Which means that over here he basically incriminates himself and says, pashati, I was negligent. So a shomer chinam, in a case where he claims gneva aveda, has a right to take a shvua, or he has the option to pay. What we said in our Mishnah is that option to pay is what gives him the right to the kefel, because he decides to pay. Now, what Rav Papa is adding is that when he makes a claim of pashati, the claim of pashati also obligates him to pay. Now, he doesn't have another alternative. He can't take a shvua that pashati, because he's going to have to be chayav either way. It doesn't really matter. So now, when he makes the claim of pashati, what Rav Papa says is, now he's going to have to pay. Now that he has to pay, he also acquires the kefel. Rav Papa is addressing your issue, which is, it seems that they should be totally different. It should be when he opts in to pay, then he gets the benefit of the kefel. Where he's obligated because he was negligent, why should he be entitled to the kefel? So Rav Papa addresses that issue and says, "Di pater nafshe b'gneva," because he could have walked away from the situation and said it was stolen. So what Rav Papa says is that even the statement of pashati by the shomer chinam is a benefit to the baalim, because the baalim now will get paid their principal amount, because he could have just said it was stolen, and then the baalim would have gotten nothing. His admission that pashati has value to the baalim, because the baalim will get their principal amount now. So his entitlement to the kefil is because he had an alternative. He had an alternative claim that would have gotten him out of being chayav. The fact that he admitted to being chayav is what gives him the right to the kefil. This goes back to what Rashi said before. Rashi says that the fact that the principal amount is certain, the baalim are willing to give up their kefil because the guy's telling the truth and giving them the principal. They just want their money back and they want out of the situation. So therefore, Rav Papa says that it's because he had an alternative. What that means is that in cases where there is no alternative, he may not get that right. So that's a Shomer Sechar. Kevin Shamar Nignava Maknelei Kenefelon. A Shomer Sechar who says that it was stolen, he gets the Kefel. Even though when he claims that it's stolen, he had no other option. Once he said it's stolen, he can't take a Shvua, he's Chayav. Because he did have an alternate claim. His alternate claim was that it was Nanas. Something happened that was totally out of my control and I'd be patur. The fact that he says it was Nignava and admits to Gneva, that gives him a right to the Kefel. Shoel. Shomer, Arini Mishalim, Lo Makni Lake Fela. A Shoel who says that it was stolen or I'm going to pay for it, no Kefel comes to him. Because by my Havilei the Mifter Nafshe, what does he have that can get him out of paying here? A Shoel is Chayiv in everything. He's Chayav, Gneva, Veda, Onsin, he's Chayav across the board. So he says, what was his only option? Meita Machmad Malacha. That was his only option that he could make a claim to get him out of it. Meita Machmad Malacha, Lo Shchiach. That is an uncommon occurrence, and therefore it's not a claim that he will make. Which is that either you say that it's not a common occurrence, therefore he won't make such a claim, or he won't assume he would have made such a claim, or it's not a common occurrence, therefore he'll be caught as a liar. He won't take that claim because it's too risky to take a claim like that because it's very difficult to both substantiate and to be believed when you make such a claim. So what Rav Papa says is that it all has to do with if you have an alternative here. As long as you have an alternative that could have gotten you out of the problem and then you say, I'm going to pay, then you get the rights to the kefil. Because either the Baalim are happy to get their principal amount out, like Rashi says, and therefore they want the principal and they don't care how it came about, as long as you're admitting to it and making yourself chayav, they give you the kefel because then they get paid out. Or because of the nachat ruach that we spoke about before, in that the relationship is in such a manner that he wants to give up the kefel. But where he has no other alternative and he's backed into a corner and has to pay, in that situation, he will not get the rights to the kefel because he had no other alternative. So then why is the Baalim going to give him anything here? The Baalim were certain of their principal payment anyway. By Shoel, the Baalim know they're going to get their principal amount no matter what happens to the animal, so therefore they're not going to give up the kefil. They don't have to give up the kefil to get that certainty of the principal payment, because that's what they're going to get anyway. What's interesting here is that there is a machloket between the Ramban and the Rashba and the Mishnah as to whether when Edim show up and say, Pasha, what happens in a case where Edim show up and say it was negligent? So in that case, it wasn't because he told us he wanted to pay over here, but rather because the Edim came and incriminated and said that there was a Gneva over here. In that situation, what is the story? So the Ramban says that when Edim show up, the Kefil does not go to him, because it's the Edim that are generating the situation and not the Shomer himself. Then the Rashba believes that even in that scenario, the Shomer still has a right to the Kefil. His right to the kefil is because of either what Rashi says over here, which is that he wants the certainty of the principal amount, and that's irrespective of how the circumstances develop, or because there's a nachat ruach, there's some sort of relationship here, and that's irrespective of the edim. So the Rashba believes that even if edim show up, that would be the case. And the Rashba asks this case on himself. He asks that there's a problem here. The Gemara seems to indicate otherwise, which is that it's only where there's an alternative claim that he has a right to get the kefel. Over here, when the Edim show up, there is no alternative claim. He's locked in. So the Rashba answers in that situation that the Baalim, as long as you don't bother them to have to go to Beit Din and they get their principal amount, then they're happy to give up the kefel. But that's only true in a context in which they have an alternative. Since they had the alternative, and they didn't bother the Baalim to have to go to court, and they just paid out, no matter what generated that payment, whether it was their own admission, whether it was the fact that they didn't want to take a shvua, or whether it's the fact that a deem came along and testified against them, the Baalim give up their kefel. But in the case of Shoel, where there is no other alternative, then he doesn't ever think about giving up the ownership to the other party, because there is no other alternative. He's going to get his money back no matter what. And therefore, he doesn't really think about having to go to Beit Din. I go to Beit Din because he assumes he's getting his money back. On the other hand, if Edim show up and testify that it was Nensa, that it was somehow out of his control, and that's why he should be Patur over here, the Rashba, based on Yerushalmi, says that you're not entitled to the Kefil in that case. Because over here, the Shomer has no obligation to pay,
And if he pays, it's all a matana. He's not preventing any other alternative from happening because he doesn't have any obligation whatsoever. Now then, the Ritva believes that if he pays and doesn't want to lishavaba sheker, to take a false shvua, even though the edim would have given him the right to be patur, he could still say, I'm not willing to take a shvua because of the fact that I don't think it was stolen. I don't think the edim are telling the truth over here. So he can say, I'm not willing to take a shvua to substantiate what the edim say because of the fact that I don't think they're right. And therefore, you're entitled to get the kefil because you could argue, the reason I am paying over here when the edim showed up is because I don't want to take a shvua, I don't want to substantiate what the edim are saying. They are lying, the edim, and I don't believe they are right. And since the edim are wrong, I'm unwilling to take a shvua to substantiate something that is wrong. And therefore, his payment is a voluntary payment in the end because he decides to do it to avoid substantiating what the edim say. And his payment is being viewed as something that's an alternative to a shvua or a shvuat sheker. And therefore, she's entitled to the kefil. But in the end, the Ritva really says is that even when you act lifnim mishurat din and you pay, you do get rights to the kefil. Like we see in the Gemara in Baba Kama, where after you've taken a shvua, you decide to pay voluntarily, even though you're totally patur, there you do gain rights to the kefil, because again, you've given the balim the principal amount, and just by the fact that you give them the principal amount, that automatically entitles you to the kefil.
Igadam, right? There are some that say, Amara Papa, Shuel Nami. The Shuel also has a right to get the kefil. Kevin Shamar, Reini Mishalem, Makni Lake Fela. Because when he says, I'm going to pay, he gets the kefela. So according to the second reading in Rav Papa, then when he agrees to pay, the shoel is no different than any other shomrim because he had a way to get out of it. And obviously he doesn't believe this issue of lo shchiach is relevant. Amrali Rav Zvid, hachi amar Abaye. This is what Abaye says. Shoel, achi shalem. So Abaye has a slightly different or nuanced approach over here, which is that a shoel does have a right to the kefil, but his right to the kefil only comes when he pays. As opposed to all the other shomrim, where the right happens from the moment you decide to pay, over here his right only starts from the time that he does pay. My time up. Hoyo v'chol anah shelo. So since by a shoel, and the reason a shoel is chayav in all of these items, is because kol ha'anah shelo. He is the only beneficiary in this case. The Baalim are getting nothing out of this. They're giving it to him for free. They're lending him the item. There's depreciation. There's working on the animal. Whatever it is, the Baalim are getting nothing out of this. The Shoel is getting all the benefits. That's why he's actually Chayav. But for that same reason, the Baalim are not going to give up the Kefil. They feel no obligation to this individual to give up the Kefil. And again, either for either reason, either because of what Rashi says is because the certainty of principal payment is there anyway, because he's going to get paid, or because of the nachat ruach, there's no nachat ruach over here. The shoel is the one shomer who's doing nothing to benefit the owners themselves, because they're giving him absolutely nothing. And so for that reason, b'dibur lo makni lake fela. Then with just words, he's not going to give up the kefil. He will only give up the kefil if he gets physical payment for the animal, and then he'll say, fine, I'll give up the kefil because then I got my money back and I'm out of the picture. But until he actually gets the money, he won't take himself out of the picture and he doesn't give up the rights to the kefil. Tanya kavate de Rav Zvid. We have a brighter that supports Rav Zvid's explanation over here. Hashuel para mi chavero, v'nigniva. The person borrows a para from his family and then is stolen. V'kidem hashuel v'shileim. The shuel jumps the gun and pays for it. V'achar kach nimza ganav. And then the ganav is found. Shileim tashlumi kefel l'shuel. So then he pays to the shuel because the shuel paid for it and therefore he has the right to the kefel. So now that is supportive clearly of Rav Zvid's position, which is that the shuel gets the rights after he pays to the kefil, and that's why the Gemara bought it. Now, as far as Rav Papa's two shitot, how do we deal with that? Remember, they had three shitot about what happens by a shoel. You have Rav Papa number one who says a shoel is never entitled to kefil. You have Rav Papa number two who says that a shoel is entitled to the kefil when he commits. And then you have Rav Zvid who says if he paid, then he has a right. The Braita clearly supports that position of Rav Zvid. What about the two positions of Rav Papa? So Gemara says, the Lishna Kamad Rav Papa, Vade Lo Aviyat Yufta. According to the first Lashon of Rav Papa, this isn't a problem, because all Rav Papa said in the first Lashon is that the Shoel is not entitled to it when he commits to pay for it. So that doesn't necessarily disagree with that he paid and now he's getting it. The Lishna Batra, Lemit Aviyat Yufta.
On the latter position of Rapapa, that sounds like a strong refutation of his position, this Braita, because the Braita says, if he paid, he gets it. So now, it sounds like only if he paid, he gets it. According to the second Lashon of Rapapa, even if he committed to pay, he would have gotten it, because he could have made a claim of Meita Machmai Malacha. Amalacha Rapapa, mi alima mi matzniten. Is the Braita any better than the Mishnah? The Tani Shilem, our Mishnah says Shilem. And yet, how did we interpret it? Ukimne Bamar. And we said, no, it wasn't that he physically paid it, but he said he's going to pay it. So even though the Mishnah said Shilem, we attribute it as if he said he's going to pay, not that he actually paid. Ochanami Bamar. So to win the Braita, you're going to read it the same way. It's as if he said he's going to pay for it. So Gemara says, Midomi. How can you compare these cases? Hatam lok tani kidem. Over there, the Mishnah doesn't say kidem, it just says shilem, he paid. Over here, it specifically uses two verbs. It says kidem, vishilem. Before the ganav is found, he paid for it. So that kidem is a lot stronger language that you can't say, oh, it's if he paid. It makes an assumption that he did pay it. My says, achitani, kidem, ma kidem, kidem v'amar. He jumped the gun and said, I'm going to pay for it. He didn't actually pay it. Like it says, v'amiktani gabi socher. By the socher in the Braita, that is, there it says, v'amar. V'gabi shoel kidem. So now it's very hard to read it that way. Because by a Braita that talks about socher, it says, v'amar. That he said it. And then over here it says, kidem v'shilem. If you're contrasting the bright though, it's very hard to argue then that kidem v'shilem means amar, that he said it. Shmamina adaf kutani. Therefore, it must be that it's literally that kidem v'shilem. Gemara says, mide gabi hadodi tanya? Wait a minute. You're asking me a question from two brightot. One bright has a lashon that says that the socher says va'amar. One says the shuel says kidem v'shilem. Now, if the two brightot are adjacent to each other, then you can argue that the contrast is meaningful. But if you're bringing me two brightot, one brightot from here, one brightot from there, who says that the brightot were associated with each other? You could say that each brightot was independent, and you can't say that the contrasting language indicates anything about the brightot, because the two brightot were learned in different times, different places, different people. They have nothing to do with each other. Gemara says, that's no problem. Shainino, the Tanai, debay Rabbi Chiyo, debay Rabbi Oshayo. They asked those that learned the brightot, the Rabbi Chiyo and Rabbi Oshayo. If you remember, the Gemara in many places notes that the Mishnayot were put together by Rabbi, and then Rabbi's two Talmidim, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shaya, were Mesader the Braitot, in an organized fashion into what we have today as the Tosefta, or other types of organized works of Braitot. Not the Braitot that we find in Shas, that are not picked out of an organized fashion, but just Braitot that are brought by an individual, where the veracity of the Braitot is questionable, and therefore the Gemara is willing to sometimes push away a Braitot like that. So then if they get a Braitot from Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshaya, that carries a lot of weight. Because the Gemara says, if they didn't learn it from Rabbi, where did it come from? If that's the case, then sometimes we'll have to reconcile between the Braitot and the Mishnah. We'll have to understand what is going on in those circumstances. So the Gemara says here, they asked those people that learned the Braitot of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshaya, Amri, Gabi Adode Tanyan, and they said they were together, meaning that they were adjacent, they were learned in a structured form where one after the other. If that's the case, then this is a huge contrast, whereby Socher says Vamar, and Bashoel it says Kidem Vishilem, now you're in trouble in terms of Rav Papa's Shita. Therefore, according to the second Lashon in Rav Papa, you cannot reconcile that with the Braita, because he says there that even if he spoke up and said he's going to pay, that he has a right to it. According to the first Lashon in Rav Papa, you could still fit him in, because there all he says is that saying it is not enough. He doesn't say there or preclude the possibility that if you actually paid it, that you would have a right to it. The Gemara, according to the Girsa that we have, solves the problem for the first Lashon of Rav Papa by saying that Rav Papa just said you can't commit to paying get kfl, but if you actually paid, you would get it. That's why the Gemara reads it. The other end, the Rabbeinu Hananel says that we are madayek from the first Lashon of Rav Papa, that when he says that you don't have a right to the kfl, that's whether you committed to pay or you paid. Never do you have a right to the kfl. Then it becomes a tiyufta, even according to the first Lashon of Rav Papa. And that's what the Rabbeinu Hananel points out over here. V'dakhinan, the Lishna Kamad Rav Papa, hu adin afilu shalem du chiyuve kapara. V'lo mahani mide the mashil de likne leik fela, ihochi kashale. What the Rabbeinu Hananel says is, according to this girsa that I just read to you in the Rabbeinu Hananel, he believes that the first Lashon of Rav Papa is also problematic versus the Braita. Both Lashonot of Rav Papa, whereas the Girsa in our Gemara, which the Rabbeinu Hananel brings afterwards, V'yesh misha goreis hachi lishna kamad Rav Papa, vade lohavia, haitanya kavate de Rav Zvid, tiyufta. He brings the way that our Gemara reads, which is that you could explain the Braita according to the first Lashon of Rav Papa. But you should know there was an alternate gears that the Rabbeinu Kanano had, which said that the first Lashon of Rav Papa is also problematic, because he basically says, according to that version of Rav Papa, you have no rights to kefil, whether you say, commit, or even if you pay. And therefore it would be problematic according to both Lashonot of Rav Papa, according to that version of the Rabbeinu Kanano. All right. Pshita, Amar Eini Mishalem, if he says, I'm not paying, which means that I'm going to take a shvua, I'm not going to pay. V'chazar amar Eini Mishalem, and then he changes his mind and says, I'm going to pay. Hakamar Eini Mishalem, he changed his mind and fine. Once he commits to pay, then we're fine, and then he gets the rights to the kefil because he committed to pay, even though at first he had denied that he wanted to pay and he had said that he'd rather take a shvua. Ella amar Eini Mishalem, if he says, I'm going to pay, v'chazar amar Eini Mishalem, and then he backs out. He said he committed to pay, and then he backs out of it. Okay. I'm not going to pay. I'm going to take the shvua. My, how do we understand his backing out of it? Mi amrina mahader kamahader bay. Is he really retracting his original position and he's changed his mind completely? Oh, dilma milte kai. No, maybe he's deciding he's going to pay, but dechuya kamadachile, that he's just pushing off, meaning that he just doesn't want to have to pay immediately. He wants to buy himself some time to pay for it. So when he retracts, is it a full retraction? That's what we're trying to understand here. And therefore, you have no entitlement to the kefil. Or is there no retraction over here? There's simply a postponement of the necessity to pay. So the Gemara seems to be uncertain about this. The Rabbeinu Tam, you see the Tosfot over here, he says, Mikan mochiach Rabbeinu Tam, Tiamar lechaveiro hashbe betol. He says to his friend, take a shvua and take it. Kodem shenishba yachol lachzorba. Before he actually takes the shvua, he can back out of it. I'll take the shvua and I'll be patur. So in a case where the shvua is on the individual and he can take a shvua and be patur, if the person who could take the shvua and be patur says, you know what, if you take a shvua, you can take it and I won't object. So if he gives the right to the other party, is that right locked in when he gives it to the other party? Rabbeinu Tam says from our Gemara over here, it sounds like not. Because over here, even though he committed to pay, he can still back away from committing to pay. So the same thing in that case. When he gives the guy the right to take a shvua, until he's physically taken the shvua, he should be able to back out of it and pull it away. That's what the Rabbeinu Tam says. Then later on in the Tosfot he says, Miu shub perish Rabbeinu Tam b'tshuva achat. And in another tshuva he says, Shapir garsina nishba balovav yishava bal korcho. And that the right to give the shvua to the other party, once he gives him that right, it's irretractable. Because kevin shekibel olav l'shalem yishava, that is because you are not allowed to change your mind once the Gemar Din has been put in place. For instance, if you go to arbitration, you're allowed to go to arbitration and then back out of that arbitration until there's a Gemar Din. Once there's a Gemar Din, you can't say, well, you know what, I don't like this arbitration. Didn't go with me, I can't do it. I don't want it anymore. So in the cases of arbitration, you have a right to back out of accepting these people as judges or as adjudicators of the case, if you do it before the Gemar Din. After the Gemar Din, you can't do it. And what the Rabbeinu Tam says in the end is, once you give the right of Shvua to the other party, it's the equivalent of a Gemar Din. Because you basically made a decision that his Shvua will bind you, and you will have to pay based on his Shvua. So it's the equivalent of Achar Gemar Din, and therefore you have no right of retraction. So the Rabbeinu Tam wanted to conclude from our Gemara that you have a right of retraction, but later on changed his mind and says, by the case of Shvua, when you grant that right to someone else, it's equivalent of Gemar Din, and you have no right of retraction. But over here, where there's no quote-unquote Gemar Din, his commitment to pay, since he has the ability to retract it, how do we view that retraction? Do we view it as a full retraction? Do we simply view it as a postponement or buying time for payment? Now the Gemara is going to launch into a series of questions. The answer in the end is going to be teku, unresolved for all these questions. But it's basically testing all the different limits of when do the Balim give up the kefil to the Shomer. Amar Eini Mishalem Umet. He says that I'm going to pay, and then he passes away. Vamru Banav Einanu Mishalmim. The children say, we don't want to pay. My, what is the din there? Mi Amrina Mehadar Kamahadri Behu. Do we say the children are backing out of the commitment of their father? Odilma Bemilta Davun Kaime. Or maybe they're bound by what their father said. And they're just pushing him off, saying that we don't want to pay. The case of Shilmu Banim, the Banim pay. I mean, that the father didn't pay for it. Rav Rashi says over here, the father didn't say anything. He passed away before he decided whether he was going to take a shvua or pay. And the children come in and say, we're going to pay. That's the way Rashi reads it. My, what's the din? Matzi amar lohu, can the mafkid say to them, ki aknek fela lavuchon, da'avid li nayach nafshai, I gave it over to your father because he did something nice for me. But for you, I'm not going to do that. So here is that other alternative. I said before, Rashi says, you're makna the kefil because of the certainty of the Karen. Here's the other view in the Rishonim, which is, based on this part of the Gemara, that the reason you're giving over the kefil is because nayach nafshai. There's a relationship that exists here of goodwill, and that's why you gave it to the individual to watch. And that goodwill also precipitates you giving him the kefil if he pays you in this instance. And that's what the Gemara is asking over here. Well, when the children pay, is that enough? Because the mafkid can say, I had a relationship with your father. I don't necessarily have a relationship with you, so I'm not going to give it up. Odilma, loshna. Or maybe it makes no difference. If he already would have done it for the father, he has to do it for the children. Shilem the banim. What about in the case where he pays for the children? The mafkid passed away. And then the nifkad, the shomer, decides to pay, and he ends up paying to the children of the mafkid. My. Rashi says the scenario here is where the mafkid passed away, and not only after that was it stolen, and the shomer says to the children, I want to pay for it and not take a shvua. The Ravid reads it the other way around, that the item was stolen while the father was still alive, and then only then did the mafkid pass away, and now the shomer is dealing with the children. Matsu amrei le, can the children say to him, ki akni lecha avuna kfela, or kfela avuna, david le neach nefshei. The reason my father gave you the right to the kefil is because you did something good for him. You guys had some goodwill between you. Aval ana and didan, lo. But for us, you haven't done anything for us, so we're not going to give you the kefil. Odim aloshna, maybe it makes no difference. Shomu banim libanim. What happens if both the shomer and the mafkid passed away, the balim and the shomer passed away, and now it's the children of both that are dealing? My, what's the din in that case? There, neither party had a relationship beforehand. Is it still binding the relationship that existed from the fathers? Shilem mechza, my. He pays for half of it. I mean, up front he pays for half of it, and he says, I'm not going to pay anymore. That's what Rashi says. Shilem mitchilato, arei mishilem mechza velo yoter, I'm not paying anymore. Does he get half of the kefil? Or does he not get a right to half of the kefil? It's not a case where he makes a deposit of half, he's going to pay the other half, because that means he committed to pay it. It's a case where he pays half and I'm paying no more. Does he then get a right to half of the kefil? Or only when he pays in full does he get a right to the kefil? Sha'al shtei parot. If he borrowed two animals, v'shilem achat mehem, and he pays for one of them, my, what is the din? Because over there, do we look at them as discrete objects? And then we can treat each one independently. And therefore, if he pays for one, he gets the kefil on that one. He doesn't pay for the other, he doesn't get kefil. Or do we look at it, it was a singular transaction in which he deposited both animals with him. And therefore, when he pays for one parah, it's as if he paid for half, and he's not paying the whole amount. Maybe he shouldn't be entitled to kefil. Sha'al min ha-shutafim. If he borrowed from partners, v'shileim le'achad mehen, and then he pays one of the two partners, meaning that he pays in full one of the two partners, and then they find a ganav. Does he get the rights of kefil from that partner? Because whatever he owed to that partner, he paid. Or do we say that he didn't pay for the whole Karen, and therefore he's not entitled to the kefil at all? So this is different than Mechsa, because over here, one party got his full payment. But still, it's similar to Mechsa, which is nobody got the full payment of the Karen. And maybe in that case, there is no kefil paid out to you. Shutafim shisha'alu. What happens if partners borrowed the item? Vishilei mechanem. And one of the two partners paid out his... what is obligated to him? My. Does he get the kefil or half the kefil that belongs to him? Or, since both partners didn't pay, the balim never got the full amount and then they don't give up the kefil. Sha'al min ha'isha. If he borrowed from a woman, v'shileim lebala, and then he paid it back to the husband. My. What is the din? Rashi claims the case over here is that he borrowed a parav nichsei malog. Nichsei malog, where the karen belongs to the woman, and the peirot belonged to the husband. So then he borrows that item, v'shileim the balat, but when he paid back and decided to pay it up, he pays the husband. Truthfully, the karen belongs to the woman, not the husband. So the paying it to the husband, does that suffice in terms of repayment? Because he has some ownership here because of the peirot that he's entitled to, and therefore it's sufficient grounds to give him the kefil, even though he doesn't own the karen. But since he is a guardian of the objects now, because of the nature of the relationship between the husband and wife,
where he gets the payroll, therefore he's the guardian of the Karen. That's enough. Or do you have to give it back to the woman because she is the true owner of the Karen? Isha, Shishala Vishilem Ba'ala, in case where a woman borrowed and then her husband paid back, my, what is the din? So if she borrowed, Rashi says again, for her Nichsei Malog, she borrowed the item in order to do or work her Nichsei Malog, and then the husband pays the money back. Again there, is the husband enough of a party to the object to be considered the Ba'alim in order to pay it back and acquire the kefel, or is only the woman who has that right to do it? So that's a question. Take it. We leave all of these unresolved. In that last scenario over here, the Bali HaTosafot say that they don't understand Rashi's safek over here. Because clearly, if he pays the full amount to the Baal, why shouldn't he be entitled to the kefel? So the HaTosafot says, Yesh li yashev, he explains Rashi in an alternative manner, which is, Shishelem the Baal chelko, kamo shayta shaveh le perutah. That he doesn't pay the Baal the full Karen amount, but he pays the Baal the value of the peirot that would have derived from here. So he pays the Baal what the Baal is entitled to. Below Shilema Karen. He doesn't pay the principal amount. And it's worse than the case where he just pays to one of the Shutafim his section. There at least he's paying the principal amount, or half the principal amount. Over here he's paying off the Baal, but he's paying off the Baal for something that's not the core principal amount of the item. He's paying him what he's entitled to, which is the peirot. So that's the way Tosafot explains Rashi's shot, but he says v'dochak. It's a difficult explanation. Therefore, he offers two possible alternatives to what the question was. V'yesh lefareish sha'al min ha'ishak she'ita p'nuya. It's a case where he borrowed from the woman when she was single, and then after she gets married, then he pays the baal back. Is the paying of the baal back then equivalent to repayment of the woman because he borrowed it from the woman when she was a p'nuya? Because now, since he has a right to the Nichsei Malog, the payroll of Nichsei Malog, does that make him enough of an owner that that's considered to be returned to the woman herself? Tosafot says the same the other way around. If the woman borrowed while she was single and then got married and the husband pays on her behalf, is that enough to be considered that he is now the owner of the situation? That's one possible explanation. V'rivan, he brings a second possible way to explain the question as the following. Sha'al min ha'isha umeita. He borrows from the woman and then she passed away. Bishilem the Baal Mahu. And then he pays the husband. So he borrowed from the woman passes away, and he pays the Baal. Is paying the Baal the equivalent then of giving it back to the woman? Tosafot says it's different than the case of the kids. Because in the case of the kids, relationship between the father and the kids, which is, you did something for my father, therefore you're entitled to the kefel. Over here the husband said, you did nothing for me. The fact that you did something too for my wife, he doesn't worry about nichuta deisha. He's not worried about that benefit or the things that were done there. The fact that this guy did something nice to his wife, he doesn't feel like he owes this guy anything because of that. When it's a father-son relationship, we see the sons as stepping into the shoes of the father. They're like karad avuon. They're like an extension of their father. So therefore, if you did something nice for the father, maybe the children are obligated in that. But a husband, we don't see the husband as being an extension of his wife, even when he inherits her possessions, it doesn't make him an extension of his wife. And therefore, just the fact that you did something nice to his wife, maybe that does not entitle you, when you pay the Baal, the rights over here, because the husband says, I don't really care what you did for my wife. Baal's now the owner. But he's an owner that says that the previous relationship you had with my wife is not meaningful. That's all it is. So he has to pay the Baal, because the Baal's the true owner now. But the Baal says, I'm not going to give you the kefel because there's nothing here that obligates me to be nice to you or give you something because you did something nice to my wife. I don't step into the shoes of my wife. I'm simply an inheritor over here. So those are three different ways to explain the nature of the question here. Now the Gemara continues, and this is coming to address a little bit of the issues that you raised before, which is, Amar Rav Huna, Mashbino Toshua She'eno Birshuto. This Shomer, who makes a claim of Gneva, and then says, I'm going to pay. So our Mishnah was a Shomer Chinam. He says it was stolen. He could have taken a Shvua. Instead of taking a Shvua, what does he do? He says, I'll pay for it. We make him take a Shvua, she'ena b'rishuto, that it's not in his possession. My daima. Chashina and Shema'inav Natanba. He thinks, you know what? He likes the item a lot. He says it's stolen. And then he pays for it. And he says, look, I bought it. So I basically bought it. So it's not such a bad deal. Now, the truth is that the way that we view this individual in this case, here, this guy is being a nice guy and volunteering to pay, and now we're suspecting him of taking it for himself. Now, if we're not suspecting him of stealing it, because we're agreeing that he's allowed to pay it, why are we suspecting that he might have taken it for himself and he wants to pay?
The answer might be what we saw earlier in the Masechta back in Daf Hey, which is the way that people view Lo Tachmot. There's an Isur of Lo Tachmot, which is do not desire someone else's property, and that's even if you pay for it. If you desire it, and then you make the efforts to acquire it and to get it from that person, you might be in violation of Lo Tachmot. And people think that when you pay for it, you're not in violation of Lo Tachmot. And that's exactly the problem over here. The person might actually think that he's not in violation of Lo Tachmot because he says, I'll pay for it. So therefore he thinks it's okay. The answer is it's not okay. But that's why a person might justify to himself saying it's stolen and paying for it and thinking he's a good guy, even though he really just took it for himself. Even though he wouldn't steal it. He wouldn't actually steal it for himself. So now, the nature of this shvua, according to many, is a shvua d'oraita. This is part of shvua t'shomrim, that you have to take a shvua that it's not in your possession. Which is interesting because of the fact that the whole reason he wants to pay is to avoid a shvua. So in the end, we impose a shvua on him anyway, but this type of shvua is a lot easier for him today. Shene b'shuto. He doesn't have to specify, there's no specifics, just the fact that it's not in his possession. Which he could say even if it was something else happened to the item. But some say that it's only a shvua d'rabanan, and not a shvua d'oraita of shomrim that the chachamim instituted in order to protect against these problems of lo tachmot. Right now, meitave. Ha'malvet chaveiro l'mashkom. Someone lends his friend with collateral. Va'avad ha'mashkom. And then the mashkom was lost. The malveh admits that he lost the mashkom. Va'amar lo, sela yevitich alav, shekel ha'yashaveh. The lender, the malveh says, I lent you a sela. And he says the collateral was worth a shekel. A sela is comprised of 4 dinar or 2 shekel. So what basically he's saying is that the collateral was worth 50% of the loan value. And therefore you owe me the other 50% of the loan. Vahalo omer, and the loveh, the borrower says, lo, kielo sela yivitani, on this collateral you lent me a sela, sela yashaveh, and it was worth a sela, patur. Because there he is a kofer bakol. Because he says it was worth the sela, and it was a sela, I deny that I owe you anything. He's off the hook, because the burden of proof is on the malveh who lost the mashkon. Sela hilvitich alav. He says, I lent you a sela, shekel hayashaveh. And again, the malveh says it's only worth half that amount. The halo omer, the loveh says, lo ki ela sela hilvitani alav. You did lend me a sela, which is 4 dinar, shlosha dinarim hayashaveh. It's worth 3 dinar. The collateral is worth 3 dinar. Now, the malveh agrees that it's worth 2 dinar. So their machloket is about the other 2 dinar. And now he's a modeh b'mitzvah on that 1 dinar. Chayav. Then he has to take a shvuah. Now the other way around. Sela yivitani alav, beta yashaveh. The loveh says, you lent me a sela, but the collateral was worth 2 sela. V'alo omer, the malveh says, lo, ki ela sela yivitani alav, sela yashaveh. He says, no, I lent you a sela, and it was worth a sela. And so he's a kofer bakol, and therefore patur ben eishvua. On the other hand, sela yivitani alav, the loveh says, you lent me a sela on it, shnaima yashaveh, it was worth 2 sela. V'halo omer, now the malveh says, lo, kiela sela yivitani alav, I lent you a sela, which is 4 dinar, and you're now claiming that it was worth 8 dinar, hey dinarim hayashaveh. It was, the collateral was worth 5 dinar, which means that he is a modeh b'miksat. Chayav, then he has to take a shvua. Mi nishba, who takes the shvua in this case? Misha pikadon itzlo, the one who's in possession of the item, which is the mashkon, which is the malveh. The malveh is going to be the one, because he was the one in possession of the pikadon, he is the one that has to take shvua. Shema yishava zeh, v'yotzi hala et pikadon. Because what are we worried about? We're worried about the fact that this person will take a shvua, and the other guy will go, ha, here it is, you're a liar. So that's why we want the person taking the shvua, we want him to be in possession of the pikadon. Gemara says, ahai, what is exactly the scenario in the Mishnah? Ilema seifa, if it's on the latter half of this braita that we brought, betipele de shvua gavi malvehi. The reason that the malveh takes the shvua has nothing to do with the pikadon, it's because he's the one who is tahakamodi b'mitzat tatana. He's the one who's modi b'mitzat. Over here, the claimant is the loved, the borrower. Claimant says the collateral was worth more than the loan. The modem mixat is the malvet. The reason he takes the shvua is because he's a modem mixat. Not because he's in possession of the mashkon, but because he was the modem mixat. So that can't be the reason for the second half of the braita. Ela mashmol aresha. It's going on the first half of the braita. Now wait, the first line in the braita is patur, so that's not a shvua. But my aresha, safe in the aresha. The second case in the aresha, which is, sela yilviticha alav, I lent you a sela on the mashkon, shekel ayashaveh, was worth a shekel or 2 dinar, the malveh says, v'alav omer, and the loveh says, lo, ki ela sela yivitani alav, I lent you a sela, shlosha dinarim ayashaveh, it was worth 3, He's chayav then because it is a modeh b'miksat. The shvua gabi lovel. At that point, the shvua belongs to the lovel. He should be the one doing the shvua. Va'amur rabbanan, the rabbanan flip it, lishtava malve. The malve has to take the shvua, shema yishava zeh, v'yotzi hala et ha-pikadon. Because what are we afraid of? That maybe this guy will take a shvua, and the malve will pull out the pikadon and say, you're a liar. Look, I have it right here. So that's why we don't want to do it. Now Rashi says the reason we do this is because we don't want the guy to be made into a sheker, a shvua sheker, and then he'll be pasul de edut, pasul de shvua. We don't want to ruin this guy's reputation. That's the way Rashi structures it. Tosafot is very bothered by this and says, why is that a problem? A person should be afraid of the other guy pulling out the mashkon, because then he'll tell the truth. If you want someone to tell the truth, you want them to be fearful that they could be caught if they lie. So why isn't it better that the malva is holding the pikadon? He thinks the malva is holding the pikadon when he takes the shvua, because then he's going to be under duress and he'll take a proper shvua. The Rabbeinu Tam says, "V'chiyav dinan takanah d'ramai." Do we set up something that's structured to help out someone who is a thief? So he says, "V'nir Rabbeinu Tam kaperush Rabbeinu Chananel." Therefore, he favors the interpretation of the Rabbeinu Chananel, where I'm going to read you the Rabbeinu Chananel. He says, "V'kashalan chi takanta l'rishei avdinan." Do we make a takanah for rishayim? We're worried about this guy lying. If he's lying, let him get caught. Why shouldn't we worry about that? Ela shema yishava haloveh. The fear is not here that he will be proven wrong, but simply it'll be a shvua, the balatala. It'll be an unnecessary shvua, because the malva had the pikadon all along, and therefore we could have avoided the shvua. The fact that we made him take a shvua is a shvua levatala. So Rashi claims the problem with the shvua is the negative that comes out of this, which is the possibility that he'll be made into a thief, or he'll be found to be a shvua sheker. Tosafot and the Rabbeinu Chananel are bothered by that view because let him be caught if he's really lying. And if he's really lying, or if he's afraid of being caught, that'll make him tell the truth when he takes the shvua. That's better to leave it with the loveh then. The answer is that, no, we're worried about a shvua levatala, not about the lying in this instance. In defense of Rashi, what you have to say is that the individual is taking a shvua about the worth of the item. That's something that you could be mixed up about, he could make a mistake about. When the other guy pulls it out and makes him look like a fool, he's going to lose his reputation or his ability to take a shvua, even though he wasn't lying. He was really, under his thoughts, he was telling the truth. But in his mind, that's what the real value of the item was. And so therefore, he's going to be hurt, even though he wasn't trying to lie. And that might be what we're trying to rectify. People having misunderstandings about the value. Gemara says, Vim ita dil Rav Huna. Gemara's problem now is, if Rav Huna's statement is true, which is that the person who has the collateral, we make him take a shvua, she'eno birshuto, that it's not his possession, why are we worried about him pulling out the collateral? Because he had to take a shvua saying that it's not in my possession. Gemara says, given the mishtaba malve, she'eno birshuto, heichi matzi mabikla. If he's taking a shvua that it's not in his possession, how can he pull it out on the loveh? So, amarova, she'esh edim, the case here is a case, she'nisrafa, they have edim that it was burnt up. If that's the case, then what are we worried about him pulling it out? Because the edim came along. El Amar of Yosef, sheish edim shenigneva. They were edim that it was stolen. Sof mehechi mighty law. Then how is he going to produce it? If it was stolen, how is he going to produce the item to disprove the lovez shua? The tarachu mighty law. He's going to make the efforts and bring it back. He'll go find the ganavim and bring it back and disprove the lovez. Yachi ki mishtaba malve nami litrach lovez. Well, if that's the case, when the malve takes the shvua and we flip it to him, you have the same problem. The loveh could go find the ganavim and bring it back. The malve knows who goes in and out of his house. Therefore, he'll make the effort to bring it. The malve, he has no information. The loveh has no idea who goes in and out of the malve's house to even know who to suspect of the ganeva. The malva has a much better idea of who might have stolen the item, and therefore he can probably go and retrieve it or try to retrieve it. The loveh is working in the dark. He has no idea who to chase down. Therefore, it's less likely that he will come up with the goods after the malva takes the shvua. So according to this view, where Rav Yosef is explaining the reason that we flip the shvua over to the malva is because we don't want the loveh taking, and then the malva, after he deems say it was stolen and corroborate the story over here, we don't want the malva going and finding the ganavim and pulling it out. If we don't worry about that with the Lovet, because the Lovet doesn't have enough information to go get it back from the Ganavim, or he's less likely to get it back from the Ganavim. Okay, we're going to stop here, 10 lines down on the top of Lamed Ayomid Aleph.